Hello, I'm David O'Keefe. This is number 0478, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0478. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, actor Tom Beards, who played Philip Chancellor III on The Young and the Restless, talks about his new revealing memoir, Young, Gay, and Restless.
I am at a really wonderful place, so happy and fulfilled alone, and I've always been on a spiritual path, that I don't care what people think of me. And very few people can get to that point. I don't have anybody to answer to. Nobody can fire me for what I write. Nobody's going to break up with me. I'm single. I don't have any children that are going to hate me for what I wrote. I don't have anything holding me back from being totally honest in a way I don't think anybody's been before.
Mike Babbins, co-owner of Evergreen Cannabis Society in Vancouver, talks about Canada's legalization of marijuana.
I think the main thing that's going on with the Canadian laws and the way they're invoking them compared to how they've done in some of the states is we have to keep in mind we're the first of the G7 countries to legalize this, and they don't want it to fall, you know, flat on our face because the whole world's watching. So I think they're just taking the most conservative approach possible and slowly easing up on the rules rather than just saying it's legal and then finding out what isn't working. So this is a way for them to have complete control over everything in theory.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0478 was David O'Keefe, a military historian and filmmaker. He's also the author of One Day in August, The Untold Story Behind Canada's Tragedy at Dieppe. He's very brilliant at what he does. He's also a great baseball fan. And back in the day, in our youth, oh so long ago, we used to play Strat-O-Matic baseball a lot. Thank you very much, David, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Police at a Florida airport removed Cindy Torek, a passenger who refused to get off a Cleveland-bound flight after she was found carrying an emotional support squirrel. Passengers had already boarded Frontier Airlines Flight 1612 at Orlando International Airport when they were told there was a situation and everyone needed to get off the plane. Frontier says Torek had noted in her reservation that she was bringing an emotional support animal on her flight with her, but she did not indicate it was a squirrel. Rodents, including squirrels, are not one of the emotional support animals allowed on Frontier flights, according to its website. The airline says police were called when Torek refused to leave the plane. There's video of the moment Torek was escorted through the terminal, pumping her fist in the air and giving the finger as she clutched her carry-on bag with the squirrel on her lap. The video was taken by fellow passenger Brandon Nixon. The passengers boarded the plane 15 minutes later, taking off about 2 hours late. But most of them didn't seem to be fazed by the delay because, as Nixon said, "This is going to be a story to remember for the rest of our lives." You know, lately, airlines have been listing the various types of animals that it doesn't allow on its flights. And odd as that may seem, I'm sure those lists exist purely because someone, somewhere, at some time, tried to take one of these said animals on board. You know, if airlines don't get a handle on these fragile snowflakes soon, planes are going to start looking like flying versions of Noah's Ark. A man who police say was run over by a lawnmower while trying to kill his son with a chainsaw has had to have his leg amputated. A warrant for 76-year-old Douglas Ferguson couldn't be served initially because of the severity of his injuries. According to the Sullivan County Sheriff's Office, officers called to a home found Ferguson bleeding from his leg and head. A preliminary investigation indicated he had tried to attack his son with a running chainsaw while his son mowed the yard. Detectives say the father and son had an ongoing feud. Ferguson is charged with attempted second-degree murder and violating probation. Wow, this family must have been scads of fun for the neighbors over the years. Surely one of them has cell phone video of this latest battle. And you know, they say the grass is always greener on the other side, but they never are talking about the knockdown, drag-out mowing feuds. I'm sure Ferguson's lawyer will try to get him out of his chainsaw predicament, but frankly, he doesn't have a leg to stand on. Police officers in Richardson Forest Preserve near Cincinnati thought they had come across a body in a plastic trash bag dumped in the woods on October the 4th. Instead, they found Mandy, a life-sized female sex doll. Residents from the area have erected a shrine in the doll's memory, leaving flowers and candles, along with messages such as, "Mandy, you were taken too soon. We will remember you fondly. Rest in peace." The doll is thought to be an expensive high-end model, which makes the mystery of its disposal even more perplexing. You know, isn't it nice of the residents of the area to be so concerned? They sound like they truly are in mourning. Interesting how such a passing brings a community together. But we all know that somebody out there is really in mourning, probably crying over their loss. I can just imagine it now. Yes, truer words were never spoken. Oh, they were sung, but never spoken. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, maybe the guy in this story could have used Mandy from the last story. A man had to be tasered by police because, wait for it, he wouldn't stop trying to have sex with a car exhaust. 24-year-old Ryan Scott Malik was four times the legal alcohol limit when police found him in a questionable position with a parked car on May the 1st. Officers tried to get him to stop, but persistent Malik from Newton, Kansas, kept going. Malik was reportedly oblivious to what he was doing, so police decided to taser him. It appears Malik had an audience of six other witnesses watching him at the time, according to court documents. He was taken to hospital and given a chance to sober up. He later pleaded guilty to lewd and lascivious behavior and was put on probation for 1 year. According to police arrest logs, Malik was arrested for aggravated assault and use of a deadly weapon back in February. Okay, nowhere in the story does it mention anything about the vehicle he violated. Did he have the car's consent? And if he did, did he call or write or text the car after? Or was it just another case of wham, bam, thank you, Trans Am? Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Actor Tom Beards is best known for the years he spent playing Philip Chancellor III on The Young and the Restless. But his own life has been even more of a soap opera than the role he's famous for. Tom, who was daytime television's first openly gay performer, has written a memoir entitled Young, Gay, and Restless. He joins us on the line right now from California. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Peter. How's it going?
Just tickety-boo. Nice to have a chance to talk with you once again. I believe we spoke back in 2009 when you wrote your book, Forgiving Troy.
Forgiving Troy, yeah.
Which, for those who might not remember, was a story of your brother, who is a schizophrenic, who, and only diagnosed later in life, was sent to jail for murdering your mother, correct?
That's right. Yes. In 1989.
What is your relationship with your brother like now? I mean, he's still behind bars.
Yeah, he's still behind bars. He was the first person in Wisconsin to get life, meaning life, which doesn't mean life. It just means 50 years. So as funny as that is, for something to be called life, meaning life, not meaning it. Yeah, he's the first person to get that. So he's in prison. He was arrested when he was 19. He killed mom when he was 19. So he will be in prison until he's 69. I forget when. 1989 plus 50, 20 more years.
Yeah.
He's in a good place, though. He's medicated. He's got a small world. He's in the best place for him. And that was a sad part, is that my mom kept trying to figure out where the best place for him was. And she did try to get him help, but we don't need to go into that. We went into that before.
Exactly. Let's talk about your new book, which is Young, Gay, and Restless. I think I'll ask you the same question I asked you back when we spoke about your first book, and why did you feel the need to write this now?
Okay, good question. The first reason is to pay rent. I left Hollywood 7 years ago, and I live in Lake Arrowhead, California. It's this beautiful mountain community with this little lake. I'm renting this home right next to the forest. It is so beautiful. It's amazing, and I'm quite reclusive. I really got tired of the overstimulus in Hollywood, and I really wanted to be alone. And because I'm an artist, I can be alone. I can work from home. But I have no guaranteed income as an artist, even though I do other things. So a couple of years ago, when many celebrities were talking about sexual assault, I shared on Facebook that I was assaulted at least two or three times. I shared that, and that became a book. They eventually encouraged me to write a book, and I thought, you know what? I can write this. At first, I was going to write a bunch of people's assaults. I was going to make a compilation of other people's, but I apparently was so preoccupied with my own. I have 430 pages on just my sex life, so this other book on other people's is going to be coming in the future.
Now, it's listed as, in the press blurbs, as a new life-affirming sex memoir, and that's not necessarily a sentence I ever thought I'd say at any point, but that's how it's being billed.
And it should be, and that may be because I've been pushing my publishers to bill it like that, but here's the truth, man. I am at a really wonderful place, so happy and fulfilled alone, and I've always been on a spiritual path, that I don't care what people think of me. And very few people can get to that point, and I also don't have anybody to answer to. Nobody can fire me for what I write. Nobody's going to break up with me. I'm single. I don't have any children that are going to hate me for what I wrote. I don't have, I don't have anything holding me back from being totally honest in a way I don't think anybody's been before. I tackle taboo subjects. I talk about fantasies. I talk about everything I've done. It is life-affirming because people are liberated by it.
Well, you mentioned that you don't care what anybody thinks about you. Is reaching this point in your life, was that a difficult thing to do? In other words, was there a time when you perhaps cared too much what people thought about you?
Oh, absolutely, man. Yeah, sure. And that seems to be the Hollywood makeup, right? Absolutely, I cared very much what people thought, and I tried to be somebody I wasn't. I wanted to be this incredible soap opera hunk that was on all these other shows, and I couldn't quite be that. All these straight guys, that's what I wanted to be. And in the 80s when I shot The Fame, nobody came out. That wasn't even heard of. So it's not like I really could have done that, but I thought about it.
But as I did mention in the introduction, you became the first openly gay contract player on a major daytime drama. So at what point did you come out, and how was that for you? How easy or difficult was that moment?
Yeah, I died on the show in 1989. I had a 3-year contract because I came to Hollywood to be a movie star. I wanted to be Tom Cruise. I didn't want to be a soap star, so I left after my 3-year contract. And but I didn't become a movie star. I really sucked at auditioning, and it didn't happen. And 20 years later, after I died in 2009, Facebook friends told me that this certain character, there's a storyline going on that, you know, my character is kind of like erased and somebody else was pretending that he was the real Philip. And I wrote to the show and I said, look, you know, why don't I come back? Why don't I come back as you know, Philip, who faked his death because he was gay? And Maria Irina Bell, who was the head writer at that point, and a very nice lady, was quite open to the idea, and she liked it. And so that's what happened in 2009. So 20 years after I left with my many gay issues, I came back very proud. It was a different time, and it was such a different time, man. So much had changed in those years, and it felt great.
You must have been the Pied Piper for the gay community when that happened in when you came back to the show.
2009. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was very cool.
So let's talk about some of the things you discuss in your current book, your new book, which is just coming out, Young, Gay, and Restless. When you sat down and wrote this, as you say, you were going to let it all fly, you were going to share everything, but as you were writing it, did you sit back and say, well, maybe I shouldn't tell that, or maybe I shouldn't tell this? Like, what was the process for you?
No, not at all. I'm not like that. The truth is, and this is what's been cool, is when you do have so much time and you're as self-indulgent as I am, you can certainly be quite analytical. So it's a great perspective to see my life and to see where I've arrived. Where I really shine is being different and being a part of groups. I'm not a group person. I'm not a follower. I'm quite unconventional. I'm much more of an artist than I am an actor. So, no, I didn't think about, oh, I shouldn't write this. I know that it's very comfortable for me to overshare. So, and I've gotten much support for that. I do know that a lot of people are not going to like it. They're not going to understand it. And they're going to be quite uncomfortable with it because, you know, it's not appropriate. So, and that's where my publicist has had a hard time trying to figure out who will receive this and find it appropriate.
Now, when you talk about not being appropriate, are you talking about those who were your fans who will read this, or those in the industry, or even those you may write about? Which group are you referring to?
Well, all of it. I mean, I really only thought when I was writing this, I thought I was writing this for gay men, you know, and I thought they're the only ones who'll possibly like this because it's so gay and I am sexually explicit, but I do try to do it with humor. And then a couple months ago, a new female friend, I didn't meet her in person, she's just an online contact, she edited it, and she was quite moved and liberated, and she said, I got to share it with my best friend, also a female. And I realized, wow, women might like this too. And when I think of the stats out there that most book buyers are female, I thought, wow, this will be interesting. I'm going to get a lot more female readers than I expected.
Oh, but come on. You played Philip Chancellor III for a few years, and you were on a daytime soap. There's very little...
But it's a gay sex memoir.
There's very little you can do, I think, that will eradicate your female base completely.
Well, you know what? I have found that to be the case. And I've been a fan of many people on different shows, so I do understand that. You know, you really like somebody and you resonate with them, and you do want to support them. Yeah, I've gotten a lot of support from females. Yes, very much.
And the idea, too, that you know, as raw as this book is, the fact that you are coming out with your truth, people are always impressed by someone who comes out with their truth, no matter how harsh it might be.
Exactly, man. And that's why my book is going to do so well. It is so blatantly honest. And my truth doesn't necessarily mirror other people's truths, but, you know, I think people are going to relate on different levels, and if not, they're going to appreciate it.
We're talking with actor Tom Beards. He is a former star of The Young and the Restless. He played Philip Chancellor III. He has a new book out called Young, Gay, and Restless, which comes out on November the 1st, but it's now available for pre-order. We'll continue our chat with Tom. We'll take a quick break here on The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File Program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're listening to The Stuff File Program. It's the choice of 4 out of 5 dentists. The 5th dentist also listens, but that's just because he follows the crowd. Here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about the new rule pertaining to cannabis as Canada gets ready to legalize marijuana this month. We'll also have an idiot of the day coming your way and much more Stuff File news here on a show that's also heard on iTunes and via Google Play. It's heard everywhere. As a matter of fact, it's also heard on Stitcher and TuneIn. But I want to bring up Google Play and iTunes in particular. Just click on the Google Play or iTunes button located on the website at thestufffile.com. And whichever platform you listen to the program on, please feel free to leave a review of the show on their site. It would be greatly appreciated. Okay, let's get back to our conversation with actor Tom Beards, known for the years he spent playing Philip Chancellor III on The Young and the Restless. His new memoir is Young, Gay, and Restless. Tom, we're living in the time of the Me Too era, and apparently there is a Me Too moment in your book as well. You write about being sexually assaulted by a boss, by a TV star, a Hollywood photographer, and propositioned by a bishop and a billionaire. It sounds like you were sexually assaulted more than once. I'm just wondering what the mindset is going into a situation like that, where if it happens to you once or twice, do you not put up your guard? How does it happen again?
Yeah, I mean, those are really good questions. And, you know, I would think that most people that get assaulted a lot have this happen during childhood, and they fall into co-create this reality, and people can spot them. That wasn't my case. My case was that I was really repressed, and I wanted to be sexually abused. I mean, as a child, nobody did, but anyway, I was a horny kid, and I didn't get any action as a kid. So, in my situation, I think it was just that I was, I don't know, opportunist, not in the word. Well, optimist. I would find myself alone with strange men because I just thought it would open doors. I didn't think it would be sexual, and I was surprised whenever I was assaulted. But I went into it, you know, kind of naive, I guess. So yeah, that's probably the thing that followed me is my naivety.
Was part of it a desire or an ambition on your part as an actor? In other words, are you describing the male version of the casting couch?
Not really. Not really. And it's really interesting because in Wisconsin, when I was 17, 18, I forget, I did sleep with a boss for a restaurant job. It's not like it was much of a, you know, a deal on paper, but that's kind of what it turned into. And I talk about that, and I did fall in love with him, but when I came out to Hollywood, I realized I'm never going to sleep with anybody for a job. So although, you know, I did get romanced by a billionaire who, you know, did want a relationship, and a bunch of other encounters, it was never presented to me, Tom, this is a casting couch, you sleep, and, you know, you have sex, and you'll get a job. That, I never really encountered that. Exactly.
One of the things you also talk about in your book is the fact that you underwent several plastic surgeries. Now, was this a situation that you did these things because it would enhance your career, or was it something you would have done anyway because it was part of your personality makeup at the time?
Yeah, dude. No, it wasn't for the career. It was for me because I didn't really like the way I looked. You know, TV adds weight, and when I first got really big on The Young and the Restless, I was 24 playing 17, and I was thin, but I looked better on camera, and I hated being thin. So, you know, when I turned 30, I tried to widen my face with some, it's called cheek buckling. It actually carves out some fat in your face, and then I tried to have some added to my jaw, some filler added to my jaw, and I had my ears pinned back at the same time, trying to look fuller in the face, and then I had a chin implant, which looked horrible, because when I smile, my chin goes out, so that was removed, and, you know, over the years, I had lipo several times, I've had veneers, and when I had lipo at 30, I was like, Doc, hey, can we take that extra fat and put it in my penis? And so, you know, I did. You know, I had some of that done too, which, of course, nobody else would talk about, but I'm so honest, I think it's funny.
And how do you feel about that now, hindsight being 2020? If you were going back in time, would you do it all again or no?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It added size. And, Yeah. Yeah, I was never small, but I was also never happy with, I was always an overachiever. I always wanted more, I suppose. So, not everything I've done cosmetically has worked out great, but I don't regret the penis part.
Your book, Young, Gay, and Restless, in writing this, was it a very cathartic experience for you to write this book?
I have to tell you that I'm incredibly self-indulgent. I don't have people to care for. I don't have kids. I don't volunteer. So it's really all about me. And in saying that, that means that I'm pretty aware of who I am anyway, you know. So it's not like a lot of new stuff showed up when I wrote it. But putting it in order, yeah, that is interesting, you know, and paying attention to the patterns that repeat it, because I've been in so many relationships and I've broken up so many times, and to try to figure out, you know, why. Yeah, that's cathartic.
Well, the one thing that you also are, and you touched on this a little earlier, and I've seen some of your work, is you're also an amazing artist. Do you enjoy that more than acting, or is it just another outlet for your creativity?
You know, as a child, I felt like I should be an actor. I felt that was my calling, which was ironic because I'm shy, so I'm a shy introvert. But an artist, yeah, that's... You know, I excel there. I've always wanted to do that. And I look back at my entire life, my entire adult life, and even my child life, and almost all, every day, I've been creating, whether it was painting or writing a script or doing music. You know, I'm always creating. So I'm fortunate that I've been able to do that. And yes, I make a living with my art these days, mostly selling pet portraits to people on Facebook and stuff like that, but I'm much more personality-wise an artist than an actor.
When you work as an artist, do you miss being an actor?
No, I don't miss people at all, dude. I've been in the woods 7 years. I rarely see people, you know, at the grocery store, at the post office. I don't miss people yet. It's been 7 years. Maybe I will, but not yet. No.
So there's no urge to act again?
No, but I would do it because it helps painting sales. And like I said, I don't have guaranteed rent. So, you know, I would do it, but I wouldn't look forward to doing it. I would just do it.
Well, I know you just said earlier that you are a shy introvert. And by the way, that's not necessarily unique in the world of people who became actors or, for that matter, broadcasters. Because you get to hide behind a character. But this book puts you now out there front and center. If this book does really, really well, and I'm sure it will, does that pose a problem for you, thrusting you back into the spotlight, which clearly the spotlight is something you don't necessarily relish?
Or it could be an answer. Because, again, you know, if I'm Philip Chancellor in front of a group, I'm shy because I'm not really that. But if I really get on a talk show and talk about the most intimate details of what makes me me, from my spirituality to my sexuality, I may actually be quite calm and relaxed, almost like a guru mentality where I'm just so centered. That could happen. I don't know. I really don't know.
Well, the book is called Young, Gay, and Restless. And Tom, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. I thank you for being on the program with us once again.
Thanks, Peter. Always nice to talk to you.
Actor and artist Tom Beards. His new memoir is called Young, Gay, and Restless. It comes out on November 1st, but is now available for pre-order. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0478, and you'll find links to Tom's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRico Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. It probably wouldn't surprise you to hear that Harvard Law School has produced almost twice as many U.S. Supreme Court justices as any other law school. Its reputation for training brilliant lawyers is well known, so when I visited Harvard recently, I made it a point to tour its law library. Located just north of historic Harvard Yard, the library contains statues and tributes to some of its most distinguished alumni, and I was happy to see that one of them honors my favorite judge, Learned Hand. That's right, his name was Learned Hand, and what an appropriate name it was. He was a respected federal judge, and while he never served on the Supreme Court, his opinions have been quoted more often in Supreme Court opinions than those of any other lower court judge. Let's be fair, that's certainly praiseworthy, but he's my favorite judge because he once said, and I quote, "Litigation is to be dreaded beyond almost anything short of sickness or death," unquote. A smart man indeed. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
Coming to you from the outskirts of sanity, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about the legalization of pot in Canada. Plus, we do have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on. And much more Stuff File news here on a program that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, a North Carolina family returned from a three-day trip to find their car, which was parked at the airport, had been possessed by a colony of ants. Carol Tedder Hacker lodged a complaint on Facebook warning people not to park in a certain section of Charlotte Douglas International Airport's parking lot. She said the car's interior and engine were infested with ants, and her 11-month daughter had ants crawling on her during their ride back to Greensboro. She said the colony had been inside long enough to build a nest in the corner of the engine. Airport officials said they offered to pay the cost of cleaning in addition to waiving parking costs. They said that ants tend to surface around this time of the year. Okay, does anybody else listening to this have the same problem with this story that I have? If I came back to my car to see that it was crawling with ants, I don't think I would be putting my 11-month-old daughter inside it or anywhere near it. Airport officials have already claimed responsibility by offering to pay for cleaning and waiving the parking cost. Well, they can also pay for a rental vehicle, too, while the work is being done. What parent in their right mind puts their kid in an ant-infested car? Do you really need to get home that badly? Someone else in a hurry, an Irishman who missed his flight at Dublin Airport, was arrested for running after the plane on the tarmac in a bid to flag it down. Witnesses say 23-year-old Patrick Kehoe broke through an airport door and ran toward the Ryanair plane, which was about to take off from Amsterdam at around 7 a.m. Declan Harvey, who was at the airport, said he could hear a man shouting, "Wait!" at the plane before he was tackled to the ground by airport workers. The airport said that Kehoe became agitated after he and a woman arrived at the gate too late for their flight. It said Kehoe broke through a door and made his way onto the apron, trying to flag the aircraft down. He was briefly restrained by Ryanair staff until airport police arrived. He was handed over to Irish police and taken to a Dublin police station. Kehoe later appeared in a Dublin court, charged with criminal damage to a door lock. He was granted bail until a court appearance in November. As he left court, Kehoe shouted abuse and insults at journalists and swung at them with his suitcase before lowering his trousers and mooning bystanders. Oh, this guy's a piece of work. I don't want to go out on a limb, but I'm guessing he has some sort of anger issues. I wouldn't be surprised if I hear that he's in the news again, or if he gets into a fight with his neighbors because he keeps shouting, "Hurry up!" at his microwave. Wow, what a winner that guy is. The Indiana Department of Transportation's Adopt a Highway program has a new adopter for a 2-mile stretch of U.S. Highway 421, and nearby neighbors aren't happy. While the Satanic Temple Indiana chapter has already cleaned up its section twice in its first year, Jill Cunia, whose property line is next to the temple's piece of road, doesn't like the group's name on the sign. "It's like advertising a satanic church in front of our home," she said. According to the chapter head, Damian Blackmore, the group is atheistic and doesn't worship Satan, although they do host several events like the Pagan Pride field trip and Lunch with Lucifer. Jill's next-door neighbor is more accepting, said Fritz Colmerton. "My reaction was, if they want to clean the highway, they're more than welcome to." The Indiana Department of Transportation says the stretch of highway through Zionsville will remain the responsibility of the Satanic Temple. Wow. After lunch with Lucifer, you know, they can go pick up bottles with Beelzebub. But seriously, would you think of throwing trash out of the window of your moving vehicle on the highway if you saw a sign that said that the road was adopted by the Satanic Temple Indiana chapter? Why would you want to tempt fate that way? And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, someone called police to report bundles of marijuana washing up on the beach in Flagler County, Florida, and a man was trying to open the packages and get some of the pot. When deputies arrived, they asked Robert Kelly if he'd taken some of the marijuana, and he allegedly pointed to his vehicle and said he was holding it there for them. But they said he didn't call them to report the drugs and didn't flag them down when they arrived, so they doubted he was trying to collect evidence for them. A search of his trunk uncovered about 11 pounds of suspected marijuana wrapped in a beach towel in an apparent attempt to conceal it. He was arrested and charged with possession of marijuana over 20 grams. Thanks to the joint effort of our citizens' watchful eyes and good police work, these narcotics are off the streets, said Sheriff Rick Staley. To anyone thinking they can take advantage of marijuana washing up on shore, I have a warning for you. Is it worth a trip to the Green Roof Inn charged with a felony just for some free weed? Wait, joint effort and the Green Roof Inn? Who's got the pot here anyway? By the way, nice quotes, Sheriff. Loved how you worked those phrases into your statement. You know, it's amazing the lengths some people will go when they see a chance for a free pot that's literally on the horizon. Imagine if it were legal. Yeah. Which brings us to our next guest on this program. Canada is about to legalize cannabis, but there is some confusion about the rules which may differ from one province to another. Among those trying to keep on the right side of the law includes already established outlets like nonprofit compassion clubs. One such location is Evergreen Cannabis Society in British Columbia. It's run by Mike Babbins, a former co-worker of mine from the radio days, and he runs it with his wife. Mike joins us on the line from Kitsilano. Hi, Mike.
How's it going, Peter?
Jess Tickety-Boo, thanks very much for being on the program with us. We had you on the program a little while ago talking about when you first opened the Evergreen Cannabis Society in British Columbia. And just to recap, you first started this, if I recall, because there was a personal family issue which required the use of medicinal cannabis, and that's how you got into this, right?
Yes, I had, you know, been using cannabis recreationally for many years, but then when my wife got sick, she was diagnosed with precancerous cells in her uterus, and we used cannabis to help treat that. While we were doing that, I realized that the young dispensary system in Vancouver wasn't all it was saying it was, and when you went in asking serious questions about health rather than, you know, what's going to get me high, you weren't getting good answers, and there wasn't proper product testing, and there wasn't a good paper trail. So once she got better, we decided to open up the store the way we felt it should be run.
Okay, so now here we are, because when we spoke a couple of years ago, of course, we were talking about the fact that there was the plan down the road to legalize cannabis, but that was down the road. Well, now we're here, and as I said in the introduction, there is some confusion because rules are differing from place to place. At the time of this recording, at press time now, I just saw another story just today that talked about the fact that there are a lot of places across the country that aren't even prepared as far as the numbers of places that can sell cannabis. Is that a problem you're seeing where you are in BC?
Yes and no. They have said here in the province of BC, because we're having we're going to have private stores as well as public stores. So my store is going to be converted into a private recreational store. Now the government has said they only have one public store that'll be open on October 17th. That's in Kamloops, which is a small town in the Okanagan. They have said that you can purchase online as of that day, and for the stores that have been running in Vancouver, they have granted, if we have our application going through with the province, but it's not completed yet, they've given us permission to stay open and continue to serve the public through the process. But that also means they are going to be closing down the over 200 illegal stores in the city, and I don't know what the small towns are going to be like where they don't have stores already open. I don't know what's supposed to happen to them on that day.
Now, the reason why I called you is because I received in my mailbox, as I think it just about everybody did, a little card, a postcard from the Government of Canada called the Cannabis Act, and the subtitle being, "Here's What You Need to Know." And between reading this card and also watching some news reports and reading some stuff in the paper and hearing different things across the country, I see that there is certain confusion. Now, one of the things, and it's listed here on the Cannabis Act card that I got from the government, several things are listed in bullet points, and one caught my eye that I'm sure a lot of people aren't even aware of, and that is, it's illegal to take cannabis across the Canadian border, whether you're leaving or coming to Canada. This applies to all countries, whether cannabis is legal there or not. Were you aware of that?
No, but it would make sense. I'm trying to figure out, you know, the logistics of this, but I'm guessing, I mean, they want to have quality control and know everything in this country is being properly tested. So if it's coming from an outside source and it gets into our market, it could contaminate the market. There's no one there to offer a recall. If someone gets sick from some improper cannabis, and then there's no one there to accept responsibility for it. Either that or they're, you know, they I really don't know. You've actually got me to lots of words. I think the main thing that's going on with the Canadian laws and the way they're invoking them compared to how they've done in some of the states is we have to keep in mind we're the first of the G7 countries to legalize this, and they don't want it to fall, you know, flat on our face because the whole world's watching. So I think they're just taking the most conservative approach possible and slowly easing up on the rules rather than just saying it's legal and then finding out what isn't working. So this is a way for them to have complete control over everything in theory.
The way you just described that initially, it makes absolute sense. It sounds very similar to the rule about bringing fruits and vegetables across the border for the same reason as cross-contamination.
And we do need to make sure our oranges are okay, right?
Exactly. Now, what about... What are the questions people are asking you as we get closer to the date of legalization?
We get the same questions over and over again. What's going on? Will you be here? What kind of weed could we buy? What products are still available? And, you know, we're kind of answering those as best we can, but the rules are changing every day. To be very fair, the BC Provincial Cannabis Board is being amazing with us. They're in constant contact almost every day. They tell us if there's anything with our application that we have to adjust. They help clarify rules for us. But it is different in each province. We know on day one we're going to have flower, dried cannabis flower seeds, and low-dosage capsules that'll be powder, not oil extracts, because they don't want anything that's been processed. So that even means, you know, hash is out the window, edibles are out the window for at least a year. So we answer those questions. We tell people if you have a pain, you know, a topical cream that you've been buying for your arthritis, we can't guarantee we're going to have it on day one. So stock up right now. We'll give you bulk discounts. Just buy a bunch. Keep it in the fridge. Better safe than sorry.
Now, you have been doing this for a couple of years now. Again, the Evergreen Cannabis Society in British Columbia, as a result of the fact that there was a gray area as to operating a business like this right across the country, you were one of a few right across the country. But now that it's being legalized, do you anticipate an explosion of competition for your business?
In our city, I think it's going to be the opposite because there have been only 15 of us who got a business license from the city, and now only 20 who are being considered by the province to have a license. But there are 200 completely unlicensed illegal shops that are finally going to be cracked down upon. So for us, it's going to be a very, very good thing.
Now, again, the last time we spoke to you, and again because it was such a gray area, you were a legal business, but I remember you saying at the time that there was a difficulty in dealing with banks, that some banks wouldn't deal with you, and that even affected your landlord renting to you the space that you were using for your business. And I recall at the time you said, when this becomes legal, the businesses that do what you do will remember the banks who did not treat them favorably.
Oh, and another one closed our account with them just 2 weeks ago. So we're under a month away when they closed our account, and they're going to be coming back for us on October 17th, and we'll say no thanks. We've been very lucky as there is one credit union in Vancouver that's run by, actually it's an Indigenous credit union, that decided a few months ago to take certain cannabis accounts. So we have one perfectly safe bank account, this very, very small little bank that doesn't have much power and they could do much, but they are working with us, and we have promised them that there's no way we're going to jump ship once the big guys come begging us for their money back.
So now we're in a point where, with it becoming legal, there's more red tape to deal with the government, but there is the fact that it is now a legal situation. So do you anticipate this will be easier for you to run your business or more difficult now that it's legal?
For me personally, it's going to make my life so much easier. I could give a lot more control to my staff. I don't need to be here as often. The way it's been going right now, I mean, we've been licensed and legitimized, but still when it comes down to buying the product, I've had to come here and meet the grower one-on-one. You know, they'd have to pretty much sneak it into the store, You know, I'd have to meet them. They'd have to show me the test results. I'd have to pay them in cash. We'd have to figure out a way to write some kind of a receipt for my accountant to keep on file. Now I'm just going to log in through the government portal, click, okay, I want this, put it on the credit card or charge my account, gets delivered to the store the next day, goes right into our point-of-sale system. I could even trust the staff to do it for me because there's a complete paper trail right now, and I don't have to be in the middle of it.
You said that the government is working on a very conservative basis because it's the first country in the G7 to legalize this, and they want to get it right. What do you anticipate, if any, will be some of the stumbling blocks along the way?
The people who aren't satisfied, I think, are going to be the big trouble. And there's two types of people in that. There's the activists who have been yelling and screaming all this time, and they've done a huge job for us. But it's kind of hard when you've been fighting for a long time to accept the fact that the fight is over and to enjoy that you did it, even though it isn't starting out exactly as you said. And I think their anger is what's going to hurt us a lot. Just chill out, man. You could smoke a joint. Relax. You did it. And then there's also the people who were pushing for legalization but had this weird notion in their head that it would just be this huge free-for-all and they could make tons of money off of it without any government intervention. I mean, the whole legalization argument, you know, for as near as I can remember since I was a kid, was legalize it, tax it, regulate it. That's what they're doing. That's what we wanted.
What about two other things for the average person out there to wrap their head around? And that is some people who think that they can drive while on cannabis. But more importantly, from a social point of view, where you can smoke it. And I bring that one up because some people say they don't want to smell it in parks. They don't want to smell it near schools. They don't want to have it seeping through their apartment doors. Which, by the way, is the same problem people have said about tobacco and regular tobacco. And we've pretty much, at least here in the province of Quebec and some parts across the country as well, we've almost eradicated smoking in public for that reason. Do you foresee another battle taking place with the smoking of cannabis in public?
Okay, let's do two things first, because I want to talk about the driving and I want to talk about the public usage. So first with the driving, you should never drive intoxicated. Simple as that. It's just you're not as safe behind the wheel. Now, with these tests that they say they're going to do, I think it's a ridiculous test. You can't prove if someone used it, how recently they used it, and stays in your system for a while. Everybody's reaction time is different. It is different alcohol in that respect. This, on the same note, I don't see why they could test people for cannabis use if they aren't testing them to see if they took some Sudafed or cold medication. I think if you're going to be strict like that, it's anything that impairs your driving should be checked. And I'm sure you've seen as much as I have so many people using their cell phones while driving, even though we have a law against that. So I think they need to rethink the way they're going to approach that. But in general, you should never be intoxicated in any way when you're behind the wheel. Now, as for the smoking in public, it should be the exact same rules as tobacco. In British Columbia, they've said the rule is going to be anywhere you could smoke a cigarette, you could smoke a joint. So whether it's on the street or in the designated smoking area or, you know, in the certain number of meters from the front door, that's how they're doing it here. I'm not sure about the other provinces. It would be nice if they made lounges. But we also have to think about vaporizers, which is another way of consuming, which is similar to smoking but without the smell. A lot of people are confusing cannabis vaporizers with the tobacco ones, which have those big clouds of artificial cotton candy selling smoke. Cannabis vaporizers use the actual bud, and they extract from that, and they produce very, very, very little smell. And the smell is almost like a fresh plant that is there for maybe 5 seconds and then gone. So I think we have to take a step back from all the stigmas and the things we've done up till now and stop relying too much on comparing it to tobacco and alcohol, and we have to re-change our rules and keep everyone happy in the process.
It'll be interesting to see how this plays out. Maybe we'll get in contact with you in the beginning of the new year and find out how things have gone over the last several months with the new rule in place. Mike, I thank you very much for being on the program with us once again.
Thanks for having me. Always good to hear your voice.
Mike Babbins, co-owner of the Evergreen Cannabis Society. Again, you can find their website at evergreencannabissociety.com, and you can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0478, and that's where you'll find their site. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
The clerk at a discount store in Melbourne, Florida, was about to give police a description of the man who robbed her, even though he was wearing a mask. His weapon, a roll of toilet paper. He was threatening to set a fire with a torch lighter. He had come into the store earlier, and she had chatted with him about his dreadlocks because they were the same color as her hair. Pink. An officer noticed a man matching the description outside the store and arrested 21-year-old Xavier Sean Kennedy, who was charged with attempted robbery with a deadly weapon and mask. Okay, now why? Oh, why? If you have pink dreadlocks, would you chat up the clerk at a discount store that you're planning to rob, go back out, come back in wearing a mask to rob the joint, then hang around outside the store when the cops show up, and let me repeat, all the while sporting flowing pink dreadlocks? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0478. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number. And once again, that's 0478. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. If you were to play this episode backwards, go ahead, try and figure that out.